Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 128. Joining us on the show this episode, our guest Mark Wingerter from Real World Theology and James Harleman, friend of the show from Cinemagogue. So listen up, because we've got another really great, dark, gritty show for you, because on this episode, we talk Logan and an incomplete hope.
No? I mean, not even like trying to be like over Christianize it or being too critical.
Not seeing the problem here. What?
Yeah.
Wait.
Oh. Yeah. And so it was so bad when we actually talked about it. We didn't really talk about Minions very much on the episode. We end up talking most of the time about like the culture of just parking your kids in front of a movie because it's animated. Yeah. And then not actually thinking about what they're getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So. But hopefully not what's going to happen with Logan. Hopefully no one's going to park their kids in front of it.
Hopefully not.
Even though I know they will.
They will.
Because that's what people do.
If they park their kids in front of Watchmen, they definitely did it in front of Logan.
Yeah, well, man, if all those people...
They park their kids in front of kids.
Oh.
Yeah.
Man. Meta.
Wow.
Like that happened. I knew a gal who worked in a video store, and my parents were coming in and trying to rent kids for their kids.
And they were just like, I don't want to overstep my bounds here. I know I'm just your local video distributor.
Yeah, that's a...
But this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, like...
Don't you tell me what to do with my kids.
Yeah. Like, don't tell me how to parent.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you're not doing it, obviously. Someone has to.
Somebody has to.
Oh, snooty. You know, once you... Anyway. Kids. Doesn't matter.
Wow. I haven't thought about that movie in years.
Well, I think...
That's a heavy one. Anyway.
I want to say, I feel like I saw another movie I did sometime recently. I think he's the same one that did the one with James Franco not too long ago. Like Spring Breakers, I think. It was actually pretty good.
I cannot confirm.
Oh, I didn't see it.
I mean, like, it wasn't like amazingly good, but it was surprisingly good. Which fell under the category of like, you're not missing too much. But if you watched it, you'd probably be pleasantly surprised. So whatever that is for people. But you know, we had people last year, I want to say surprisingly, but not really surprisingly, you know, bringing their kids to Deadpool because they don't pay attention to the internet or anything.
In which Ryan Reynolds, as Deadpool, literally said, don't bring your kids to this movie.
Yeah, don't do it.
but
that's what we have. We have Logan. We're with Logan. Fox has now experimented twice with the R rating on superhero films. Or at least, you know, in recent history. I didn't actually fact check this against like all of history, but I would doubt it. That there's another example. So now twice with the R rating on these superhero films, and I can almost put superhero in quotes, I think, at this point. And it looks like they're probably gonna hit the jackpot again. I mean, Logan's making a lot of money. Critics are like legitimately loving Logan. So I'm kind of curious. Not at the controversy of making R-rated superhero films, because we talk about that a lot on our Deadpool episode. And if you want to hear us talk about that, you can go listen to the Deadpool episode.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, like James, do you think this is the beginning of a trend? Or do you think it's just like these two movies happen to lend themselves to R-rated material, you know, with the violence, the gore, you know, the language, things like that? So there only are because of the material, or do you think you will find more and more studios pushing R-rated films since now we realize the R rating isn't the kiss of death for box office numbers?
Well, I, you know, we always have to, well, sorry, Hollywood has to always hype that that everything is this brand new, exciting trend that they're doing. You know, mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, Frozen comes out and everybody forgets that we already had Mulan and we already had strong female characters. And it's fascinating to me. We've had The Crow. We've had back in the 90s. We've mm-hmm. had Sin City. We've had R-rated comic book adaptations before. You know, is it – Deadpool is unique in some ways because I suppose then it's like, well, he actually interacts in a more regular way with PG and G-rated other superheroes within mm-hmm. the comic context. But so I think we're going to see a little bit more freedom, but I don't suddenly think they're going to start – I don't think we're going to see a slew of R-rated superhero films because the reality is, I mean, we've got Lego Batman. We've got I think they're adapting the source material and there's going to be a little more freedom to look at the source material and say, you know, this was a really dark story or this is a very dark character. Mm-hmm. And so we don't need to save the rated R for Sin City and other things. There might be a slight a little bit more of a release and liberal use of the R for cape wearing characters.
Yeah.
But I don't suspect we're going to see I'm not a meteorologist and maybe I'm calling the weather wrong, but I think there's too much proven summer blockbuster box office in things like Civil War and other things that are still riding the PG-13 line and still even mm-hmm. horror movies that are doing the same thing. So I think realizing that it's not a kiss of death is very different from deciding to, you know, suddenly start a whole new parade
instead of pushing all your chips to the middle on like, oh, they just want to see violence and gore or whatever.
Yeah, I agree, because I think, you know, looking back, you know, the Blade movies, Blade's mm-hmm. a comic book superhero of sorts. Yep. You know, Blade 2 is Guillermo del Toro like at his R-rated horrorness, which is amazing. Watchmen, which was really popular and sold, you know, lots of tickets. That was an R-rated movie, and they pushed that one pretty hard. And I think it, you know, it's like James is saying, lends itself to the, or Mike, you were saying, just lends itself to, somewhat to the content of the movie, I guess. But I mean, you could have had Logan be PG-13; it would have been a different movie. Mm-hmm. But I think you still could have done it. And I think that's one of the things that struck me about Logan was I didn't feel like. I felt like the R rating was pushed, you know, and that they could have had the same story as a PG-13. Now, it wouldn't have been as effective. It definitely would have been of a bit of a different tone.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think that freed them up to explore some things they might not have explored with PG-13. But I definitely felt like they were throwing the cursing and the gore in there simply because they could get away with it.
Well, it's like
at points,
like maybe they hit a threshold and they mm-hmm. were like, well, if we're going to go up to this, yeah. we've already got the rating,
right?
So we might as well,
yeah,
indulge.
I mean, like as loose as Xavier and Logan were with the tongue
mm-hmm.
when they were having their like first encounter was like, I mean, you know, it seems like they could have had the exact same conversation with all the F words. I mean, like, I'm fine with the F words, but like, it just seemed like, wow, this is a little weird. And I was surprised that it was a little weird to me
mm-hmm.
to kind of see them, you know, you're used to when those two are on screen together, having some kind of philosophical, you yeah. know, clean conversation, yeah. you know, like, so polished conversation, I guess, is what
I want to circle back to that.
Yeah.
When we get into plot, some of the plot movement, but I wasn't surprised with Logan. I was surprised with Xavier, but
yeah.
I'll speak to that later. But I don't disagree with the F words. I think that this movie trying to stress the gravity of killing, kind of like Unforgiven did for kind of a punctuation on all the spaghetti westerns of Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
I think you go to a particular scene as early, you go to a particular scene where even characters really aren't even able, characters are kind of paralyzed and he's literally goring them in essentially cold blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The point they were trying to make about the weight that he was carrying, I think that just as Unforgiven was rated R, whereas maybe we could go back and score some of those old Clint Eastwood westerns with a variety of degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I think landing the plane on the weight, I do think that the gore had its place. You could argue more or less, et cetera, but I think it's been handled so just out of sight in the other films, although the unrated The Wolverine was actually had more gore, and I actually appreciate it. I like that the longer cut better, but
ooh, I don't think I've seen an unrated version.
I need to go watch that now.
Dang it.
Yeah,
it definitely not only has more gore, it also has a few extra character scenes, which I think make it a better film. But so I love the last two. I love both The Wolverine and now Logan. Yeah, but I think that the gravity of seeing the horrificness of the death in relation to the character's torture did help. So I was glad for that it was rated R.
I agree. I really feel like this is a much, much better movie for the gore, the heavy gore, because of the same reasons. For we could talk about that during plot, but just, I mean, in terms of it, the movie did feel to me like it was there was a contention and kind of a pull to sort of like, because it's an X-Men movie, even though it's not an X-Men movie, mm-hmm. you know, it's set in that. We already have expectations for an X-Men movie.
Expectations.
Yeah. I was wondering when the X puns were going to come up. Like,
I feel like it's Pee Wee's Playhouse. Like, anytime someone makes an X pun, we're like,
in the future where all the mutants are extinct.
Oh, no. Yeah. So, anyway, I think there was a little bit of a contention between what they could now do and sort of get away with. Like, they have a little bit of a hall pass to, mm-hmm. you know, crank things up a notch. And then what it sort of felt like inherently because of what I've come to expect from these films, it should be. So there's I feel like, you know, because this is sort of, is it going to a trend? Maybe, maybe not. I don't necessarily think so, because PG-13 is still going to sell more tickets, but... I felt like that there was a, maybe it was my own personal view of it, but there was a contention of like, this shouldn't be as heavy as it is, you know, like as dirty, I guess, you know, for lack of a better term, not dirty or like raunchy dirty, but like, you know, they're letting it fly, man.
For anybody who's deciding whether or not they want to see it. I mean, I love this film because for all of its heaviness, it did not have it. It had characters very upset, you know, using F words and things, but it did not have the crass nature or the sexual nature of Deadpool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Two very different movies.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And I mean, because I think it's been pointed out, and some people even forgot when we were talking about the film, that there is like just a literal flash mm-hmm. Of nudity in the film, which almost seems like it was completely put in there because, like we were talking earlier, they got to a point where they said, well, it's R, so we might as well put all the R things mm-hmm. in it. Mm-hmm. So then if you did take your kids, you feel really bad.
hopefully.
Yeah, well, yeah, hopefully. I mean, unless you're a bad parent. Well, so it's funny that you're kind of... stumbling for words to describe some of the heaviness, Mark, because I remember trying to, everyone who's asked me about the film, they're like, oh, how'd you like it? Or what was it like? And I'm like, I'm sitting there in my mind having like this out of body experience every single time telling myself, figure out a word that's not gritty. Say something besides gritty. Say something besides gritty.
And I'm like,
gritty.
Because I had just seen it and just reviewed it mm-hmm. on the podcast, I think this. I feel like I've been telling people it's basically John Wick but Wolverine, and I really mean that because it's very stylized violence, and every shot's a headshot. I mean, like it's a claw shot to the head. I mean, like there's a lot of that, and I feel like while it's not as lush with violence as John Wick is, I mean, this feels like Wolverine's John Wick or Wolverine Wick.
Well, you know. I would say if I was going to make that comparison, I would say that it's like a drunk John Wick because
it's
beauty,
a Western John Wick.
The bunny ears beauty of John Wick is that John Wick from start to finish is a dance of violence, like a beautiful dance of violence, mm-hmm. like the choreography, the fights, the headshots, headshots and headshots. It basically almost has like this entrancing power. Whereas Wolverine, there is lots of violence. There are lots of headshots. And
it's a drunken brawl.
But it's grittier.
Oh, much.
But I mean, it looks like a broken man who's just brawling through for survival. Yeah. Now he's still being basically as effective in most cases as John Wick, but it is a little bit different. The thing that I like though is, and we're talking about how intentionally dark and heavy the film is, because it does that. It sets it apart from the other X-Men films from the very beginning, from the very first scene. It basically says I know you've seen 100 of these X-Men films now, and Wolverine swings his fist claw at somebody and they go, oh no, I'm dead, and fall away. But from the very first scene, it's nope. This is what happens when you when you slice at somebody with adamantium claws.
Well, the first line of the movie is WTF. It's Logan going, what the?
So, it sets the scene, and, at times, wrestling with the R rating, we can say, did it need it? Mark, you're saying it probably, the story could have been conveyed as PG-13, but Seth Hurd over at Relevant published this article kind of contrasting The Shack and Logan both coming out at the same same weekend.
That's a great article.
I like what he says about Logan, when he addresses the darkness, because he says, because the badness is so real, the moments of redemption are so clear. If the darkness isn't so bad, there's no real need for saving.
Yeah.
And while I want us to eventually get to the ending, because I want us to talk about some things that are narrative driven and some things that are the larger X-Men universe implications, we can talk about the redemption at some point, but it reminded me of this quote that my wife pointed out to me from Flannery O'Connor, which means, yes, my wife mentioned something to me, and I totally heard it, and I totally remembered it.
You were listening.
I was listening. It's my superpower.
Achievement unlocked.
That's right. Yeah. and it's Flannery O'Connor talking about basically how Christians make art, and how we try to convey things to the world. And while I don't think James Mangold is trying to make a movie with a Christian message, I think if you tell a good story, you're probably going to have, obviously, the whole reason we're doing this, the fingerprints of Christian narrative in there somewhere. And so Flannery O'Connor says, the novelist with Christian concerns will find it in modern life distortions which are repugnant to him. And his problem will be to make these appear as distortions to an audience which is used to seeing them as natural. And he may feel he may well be forced to take ever more violent means to get his vision across to this hostile audience. When you can assume that your audience holds the same beliefs you do, you can relax a little and use more normal ways of talking to it. When you have to assume that it does not, then you have to make your vision apparent by shock. To the hard of hearing, you shout, and for the almost blind, you draw large and startling figures. And I think that is basically what holds up this this line that Seth Hurd puts forward in his Relevant magazine when he says, because the badness is so real, the moments of redemption are so clear.
Man, podcast over. That's it.
Boom, done.
That's it.
Well, I mean, yeah. So Flannery O'Connor, hey, remember when C.S. Lewis explained this so much better? Remember when Flannery O'Connor did this? Yeah. Hey, let me just drop a Tim Keller quote and we'll go home. So, I hear, what you guys are saying, and I totally agree this movie is dark and stuff, but I think, could it be done as a PG-13 film? I'm not exactly sure, because I think we might write it off.
Yeah.
I think we might write it off as because the Wolverine, I was like, man, that was so close to being such a better film than all the other X-Men film, but it didn't quite go there.
Mm-hmm.
And Logan's like, we went there, this isn't, James, this would be your opening to talk about, Patrick Stewart, or Charles Xavier, with foul language, as soon as I saw him do that, I was like, this world is messed up. Mm-hmm. If Charles Xavier, it was like,
well, this is the one thing I still haven't seen anybody really addressing about the film. I've seen people addressing issues of the morality, and I've seen the talk on theology websites. I've seen some talk on obviously Mexico and mm-hmm. sort of the immigrant and the border stuff. And of course then the fatherhood. I think people are missing, to me, this movie has three very distinct acts. And certainly the third act is a man coming to terms, is a father coming to terms with his daughter. Mm-hmm. The second act is really all about surviving life and bloodshed. That's your action center. I mean, from the minute they're dragging a guy with a car in barbed wire, it's like, all right, we're in Fury Road territory here for a while. But to me, the first third of the movie isn't about superheroes at all. It is about a frustrated old man who has become a caregiver to his surrogate father. This is, I mean, we have a man dealing with basically his father in a late state of Alzheimer's and dementia. And he's the frustrated caregiver, like many 50s and 60s folks I actually pastor and deal with right now. Mm-hmm. You know, people are living longer. You've got people with dementia screaming, forgetting all, you know, totally their personalities upended, screaming at their children for, you know, hating them or just waiting for them to die. Mm-hmm. And people like, you know, it was almost humorous to see the almost spouse type conversation between Caliban and Logan.
Yeah.
Or maybe brother, sister, siblings, where yeah. it's like, you know, you're not dealing with dad right. You're not, the medication's not right. You had a, even to the point of in real life, caregivers dealing with depression and suicidal thoughts and, mm-hmm. you know, and struggling to make ends meet and just working a job that's killing them to try to then basically just shepherd somebody into the grave who can't even remember day to day what they've done for them. And that to me, like if anything in the film, almost more than, you know, Logan dealing with Laura, it's like, that was almost the hardest part. That's what ripped my heart out at the beginning of the film. When Xavier is so far gone, I mean, he yells that at him. He's like, "You're just waiting for me to die." You say, "Yeah." I mean, dementia does things like that. Mm-hmm. Even men like Charles Xavier, even some of our, you know, some of our noblest fathers in stages of brain decay, mm-hmm. turn into the foulest people. And it also makes, I think, Christians wrestle with ideas of where their faith's at and God, and it that is one of the most hopeless and helpless places you can be is an unappreciated caregiver, and that was a startling thing I wasn't expecting to encounter in that in its fullness. I kind of saw some of that coming from the trailer, but not with the immensity. It's like the first third of the movie didn't feel it's like this is not a Marvel movie at all. This yeah. they could have no powers and it's just
yeah.
a amnesiac.
Just a family drama.
Dad and a family drama. That blew me away. So I haven't heard yet enough talk about the fantastic performances. And then even Patrick Stewart and the daring idea then to take a character like Xavier and say, okay, the greatest mind even can in its later years mm-hmm. can fall prey to those things. So then we come back to those F words. I was like, I think that was in some ways that just punctuated like how this man has become a completely other man, and mm-hmm. yet with glimmers of who he was before. When he's begging for, when he's apologizing coming out of Vegas, that was mm-hmm. again, I was more traumatized than some of the later things, which were the easy strikes, the easy narrative points.
Yeah, I've never seen Patrick Stewart on stage. So I only have to go by his films, but I dare say this is the best I've ever seen him. You know,
which is still saying a lot.
It's saying a lot. I mean, because he really effortlessly made this really, you really feel the pain that this movie is trying to convey, with these characters and where they are in life and how close they are to death and dealing with mortality. And it is humbling to see this, being, I guess, this hero of sorts, this big father figure, you know, this man with the world's most powerful brain, having, you know, problems with that, real human problems. It was really, I really didn't see. I mean, I really consider that as much as you did, James, until now. I mean, because you know, it is a really very distinct first act where it is more of like a family drama, and I think, I mean, that's what. And I want to just reiterate, I don't mean to say that this movie should have been PG-13 or anything like that. Definitely.
Well, that's what I heard.
Well, of course you did. Because you never listen to anybody but your wife.
That's right.
And fight!
Oh. Round one. But yeah, I really think they really needed to, if they were going to make this movie the way that they did, they really needed to draw you out of the Marvel fatigue real fast. Mm-hmm. And they really did that. So I think it's a powerful movie, much more powerful than it could have been with a lesser rating. And I do think it all lends itself to driving home all of the themes that it's dealing with.
Not that I don't think there were fine performances all around in this movie. But I remember one of the first things that I thought when I left the theater was, you know, to date, if there was ever someone who was going to win or at least, you know, be nominated like for an award for or like an Academy Award for a superhero film, like let it be Patrick Stewart for just crushing everything in this film. I mean, gosh, like him being almost a reflection of what Logan sees himself becoming, like someone whose power is basically crippling him, and the things that used to make him, that he used to be his strength, are becoming his weaknesses. Like going out there and caring for Charles, knowing that his fate is going to be similar, you know, like what happens when his healing power just completely stops being able to keep ahead of the poison. You know, it's just, I think that goes back to, you know, what you're pointing out. I mean, I think one of the hardest things, I think there are a number of hard things, just like you point out, James, in caring for an older, like a parent, especially during times of mental instability or sickness. But I think there's a lot of humanizing that happens too when you stop and you say, you know, this is my parent, or this is my lineage, or, you know, the closest thing that Wolverine really has to a family. Mm-hmm. And you say, this could easily be me, or when's it going to be me? And I hate the idea that one day I'm going to need this.
And it's something that the X-Men films haven't really delved into since the first one. Because, you know, the story, the kind of like human struggle element to most of the X-Men films is the outcast nature of being an X-Men or a mutant. The first X-Men film dealt with largely a lot more what the comic was originally intended for, which was, you know, kind of the civil rights, you know, mirror, with, you know, Xavier being the Martin Luther King figure and Magneto being
Magneto. Thanks, white people.
I'm blanking. I'm sorry. Malcolm X figure. And so, you know, that was, you know, the first movie dealt with that, more of that civil rights struggle, which had a lot more of the human element to it, being a mutant and a human and what that means, and being different. I mean, this is really, you know, after that, you know, X2 is a great movie, you know, X3 is terrible, but like all of these, they're all flashy with the leather suits and the powers and the green hair or whatever. You know, it was all colorful, it was all flashy, it was a blockbuster. And so you never really, you know,
They're primarily concerned with being like an action film.
Yeah, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the X-Men movies have, you know, this underlying human element to them of like, you know, the burden that these powers can, you know, have upon a person. And this movie is really just taking that to kind of the end of the line, obviously with death, but, you know, the ultimate ending of like, what will these powers actually do to your body? What will they make you physically struggle with? And it's perfect to be wrapped in a movie about Wolverine whose body can heal, because his body's now not doing that anymore, and that is not only bringing the literal scars out, the physical scars out, but the emotional scars. And so that's, you've got just really, this movie is a culmination of everything that the X-Men films have kind of, you know, put on a pedestal a little bit about what it's like to just be human and to struggle with things that are outside of your control and they're just natural, natural things that are happening to you. So it's a great, you know, it's being in those three acts is, man, it just really drives it home. It takes time to settle and focus, much like they compare this to Shane, one of the greatest Westerns, you know, the Shane's in the movie, one of the greatest Westerns ever. I mean, this is, you know, James Mangold's trying real hard to make this a Western, obviously. I mean, he's being obvious with the comparison, which I actually think helps with it being so obvious. But yeah, I mean, with, you know, Westerns get to have a little bit of a, you know, silence and moments of reflection that, you know, an action blockbuster X-Men movie doesn't get. So it's perfect. It's almost perfect in that way. I think there's some flaws, with the movie, but
yeah,
it's almost perfect in that regard.
Yeah. And
I think about Avatar getting, you know, I think about, now that we have more Oscar nominations, if something like Avatar, Lord of the Rings could get nominated, I don't see why this couldn't be considered at least to get a nod for amongst popular genre films being something that is exceptional in its area, whether that would be a best picture. I would love to see Patrick Stewart win an Oscar, but I also, I would not, you know, I would say Hugh Jackman's worthy.
Yeah.
And I think that even some of that comes out, at some point, it's also the end of his run. Not that he deserves one like Return of the King. So it's got to, you know, jump into the Oscars, but if anyone's career of work and then the nature of this film, was going to give that opportunity, I think it's deserved.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that Fizz and I have talked about several times is that if you look at 2016 and all the movies that, you know, set out to accomplish a certain goal, was there any movie in 2016 that nailed its goals better or more perfectly than Deadpool? No. I mean, like, Deadpool set out, had a really particular goal, a very crass goal. It had, you know, it was a send-up of superhero movies. It was an acerbic comedy that was, you know, brutish and brash and, you know, still needed to have a complete story. It's a superhero origin story while still making fun of superhero origin stories. I mean, so it was it's a very perfect example of what it set out to do, you know, and it doesn't get nominated. And I feel like Logan is very much a movie that did that. It accomplishes its goals that it set out to do. It really drove home everything it wanted to. And I think,
but what more can you ask of it?
I think that's, movies that do that are worthy of awards attention, even though ultimately those don't matter, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
if we're having that conversation,
I would say that, well, so we get to start early in the year this year. So for the rest of 2017, there's a good chance that you're going to hear me talk about how great of a movie year I think 2017 is going to be.
Yeah.
Because I talked about it in 2015. And I talked about how bad I felt 2016 was going to be all year. And already in 2017, every month you get four or five films that are getting heavily marketed every month in a given film year. And in most years, February comes out, you see like five films come out and four of them tank and one of them is surprisingly good. Same thing kind of happens in March, et cetera, and goes on. But right now we're in the exact opposite of that, where like four films are really good and then The Great Wall is bad, you know, like, and so the only thing I can see stopping Logan leaving an impression with how well it does what it sets out to do. Maybe, again, not for everybody.
Right, sure.
But it sets out what it intends to do. I don't see why it doesn't get some of the same kind of push that Mad Max got 2 years ago, where Mad Max probably should have won Best Picture. It's probably, you know, we kind of all said, well, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But when you can pick like 8 Best Picture nominees, again, I think 2017 might be phenomenal. But I don't see why Logan can't, for just checking all the boxes and doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, you said something, back there, Mark, when you're talking about how the X-Men film tend to give us a certain picture of the X-Men or kind of focus on a particular theme and how it never really explored this or that quite as much as it could, even though you see hints of it, especially if you were to like step back from the X-Men franchise and look at just the Wolverine. It's one of the reasons I think we all enjoyed the Wolverine so much, because it was one of the first ones that said, okay, we're not focused on basically making the same movie again, except flashier or more action. We're actually like trying to dive down into a character. And while I would say there are some missteps in the Wolverine, kind of trying to keep it fitting into that action genre, especially at the end, it does start to look at that. But what we see in Logan is this idea of a character, or maybe less an idea of a character, more of a logical conclusion. Every time we see an X-Men film, we see characters who, like, when they die, it's almost like an action flashy, like, oh, they died in the middle of a battle. Like, we never really get to see, like, X-Men living their lives out, like, to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what their final days look like and how they have to reconcile the things they did do and they didn't do over the course of their life. And honestly, there's probably obviously no one better to do that with the person who's going to live the longest because of his powers. Even furthering that is you don't get to see many people on the losing side of something.
Right.
So when X-Men movies typically end, even if they've suffered some losses, we still, as an audience, firmly feel that they're on the right track. They're winning the moral battle. They're winning maybe the actual battle. And surely they will come out on top.
Mm-hmm.
Logan says they fought all their life. They lost.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're looking back after Logan has lived a long life of loss.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you live with your past? How do you live with the things that you've done? And the things that were done, you know, to you? Like, where do you turn for solace when the world has let you down? How do you learn to be better? They're just questions sit at the heart of Logan, like the review at Birth Movies Death points out, that Logan doesn't really offer any easy answers to.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about Logan, like I said, he's lived this life of loss where... you wonder why he's all grizzled and, you know, grumpy and wanting to push everyone away. But like basically everyone he's ever let close to him and who's tried to drag him out of his lone, you know, one man wolf pack life. Like they have all died. Like Jean's gone. The X-Men are gone.
Well, yeah. And he's basically immortal, but he's not, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
He's got this healing factor that's gonna, you know, it's been dealt with in many different, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, comic book iterations of this idea of immortality and the struggle and the weight that will bear upon you is that, you know, you're going to see everybody you've ever loved or cared for or had any involvement with die, and you're just going to continue on. And so it's really interesting to me that as long as Wolverine has lived, ever since we met Wolverine, he's been dealing with the scars of his past. Right. Ever since we've met Wolverine, he's been dealing with the burden of who he is, this killer, this raw animal. And yet he has this side of good in him that's fighting against that and trying to come out. And that's largely, you know, kind of a microcosm of the story that he goes through in this movie. Is fighting the pains of the past. He's this animal that's got a second act, you know, just kill a lot of people because that's entertaining.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, survive. Man, you got to, and to, you know, sell movie tickets, which I'm all in for. And then you got to deal with like the good side that is ultimately trying to come out. That's been his whole arc. And so he has lived for all of these years and dealt with all of this loss, and yet that good remains. And I think that's a testament to the character, but also a testament to what we can do in ourselves with our time on this earth, despite the fact that we have things that we're fighting against. And that's why I love the Wolverine as a character, because you know at any one time he can come out and just kill a bunch of dudes and just kick some butt and be awesome. But he's got this animalistic rage that you kind of want on your side, which is just a fascinating duality to me. And so the Shane line that gets quoted, you know, 14 times in this movie, that there's no living with a killing, you know, there's no going back from it, right or wrong. It's a brand that sticks. You know, that is something that is just totally Wolverine. I mean, he has to live with a killing. Literally, his body cannot die for most of his life. You know, he, spoiler alert, he dies in the movie. However long that'll last. But he literally has to live with the killing. And so this idea that what a killing will do to you and what it kind of changes you into is something that is fascinating for the Logan character, because he's always trying to fight against that, get away from it, and yet it draws him back in every time, and he's forced to just live on and live on and live on because of what his powers can do for him. So the fact that it all kind of comes to head in this movie with, you know, this idea of a caregiver and later in life and being a father figure, and you know, these forces that are coming to literally try to, you know, uproot your life and kill the people you love. You know, it's what makes the character great and what makes the movie great.
So what I thought you were going to say when you talked about the line was the fact that they use that one line about, you know, it's like a brand that you have to carry, but also the idea that, despite all the pain, like, and the loss and the hardships that he's had to face, and how it's basically pulling him in many directions, but most of those directions are back into like this primal instinct, this thing that he was created. There, like I said, there's that line that says, like, it's about not becoming what they made you.
Yeah.
And I think that's like pivotal.
Yeah. Well, that's to us, that's an, you know, a pivotal gospel, you know, idea and truth, is that you don't have to be what the world makes you, which is kind of basic, but it has so many layers to it that, you know, we can learn from, you know, a superhero movie, is that, you know, we don't, despite the pain, despite the evil in us and around us, good still can triumph. And I mean, that is so inherent and ingrained in us that's what we look for in all of our characters. I really feel like that's why,
what we lift up in our characters.
That's what we lift up.
We found altruistic, moral.
Well, and I think we search for it too, because, you know, this sort of rise of the anti-hero over the past decade, you know, where we have all these, you know, protagonists who traditionally would be antagonists, are these evil characters, you know, the Walter Whites of the world. I think you're always watching those guys hoping for the good. I think we're drawn to their evil because we think that there can be good out of it.
We
hope for it because we want it, and because we inherently we believe it and it's ingrained in us.
Yeah. So Mark, you've already talked a little bit about how the film really is elevated by the inclusion of this Western. So we see Laura, or X-23, you know, however she is. We see her possibly seeing the first movie she may have ever seen. And it's something that, you know, it's a movie that obviously meant a lot to Charles as a kid. And they're sharing this moment. And it gives Laura words to help understand the struggle that her dad, her involuntary dad, is going through. And the struggle that she's going through as well, that she might not, you know, really have had a chance at a young age to really sit and think about. So I'm kind of curious how this parallel worked for you, James. Like, when they include this like clip of the Western, and then they don't bookend it, but it kind of ends Act One, but then it also ends Act Three.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Here's where I think I will crap just a little bit on some reviewers' view of redemption that is portrayed in this film. And yet at the same time, I'm not saying that as a negative. I think the Shane quote is pivotal even to address old. I've seen a growing creep in the X-Men movies where, I mean, yeah, you start out with the first one, you've kind of got two teams, right? You've got, you know, Virtuous Charles or Survival of the Fittest, Eric. And as the series has gone on, I mean, maybe you go all the way back to Days of Future Past, really the protagonist in some ways is Mystique, who's kind of saying neither of your views work.
Yeah.
And now we're watching Logan, and it sadly looks like ultimately Xavier's dream kind of fizzles, you know, so that hope for the best, that there is less hope in this movie than I think. Some people see more hope in this movie than I do. I think that's left a very open-ended question of maybe there's hope, just maybe, because there's so many problematic things with the Shane quote, because unlike the little boy in Shane, X-23 has already been, if it's a brand, she's been branded in blood.
Yeah.
And kind of like, it reminded me in some ways of Children of Men and some other films where you're trying to get the person to the boat or to the border.
It's like every video game.
Yeah.
There's a video game. What was it? The Last of Us with the,
yeah.
Yeah. There's a video game very much like this but where you're taking them is enigmatic and maybe not even real. And we're still not sure. We hear a voice in the movie. And so that we know they've gone somewhere, but could it be another trap over the Canadian border? Mm-hmm. Could the Canadians just be as terrible as, you know,
come on, James, even in a fictional world, the Canadians are never going to be that bad.
Of course we're good. What are you talking about?
About.
Hey.
But that's just it, right? We never see them. There's no contrast that with the boat. Like Xavier's last words, he thinks they're on the Sunseeker. He thinks, you know, he says that he's the Sunseeker, and he's laying in the back of this pickup bed, and he's like, "We've reached paradise." No, you haven't.
Yeah.
And so there is a hope that they're crossing over into something that might be better, but I'm not even sure Logan at the end. I mean, does he truly believe it exists, or is he just seeing to their survival, to the, you know, just like an animal would to its progeny, to the next season of playing hunter and prey, right? I mean, I'm not sure the movie, even then, to the end where, you know what, the X, the cross is turned to an X. Mm-hmm. So the best you've got is an X dream. I don't know that Logan feels that anything he's done got him atonement. I don't know that he is certain what's going to happen to her, or if does the film even say that she can beat the brand that she's bloodied with. And so there is that ultimate question where I think the X movies have been moving in our postmodern culture of, man, dude, is Xavier's, you know, Stan Lee and the Xavier's dream, is it really the answer at all? Does it fall short? And I'd say the best he could give was that idea of coming together and putting hope in family and love. And of course, as a Christian, I feel like there's a lot of wonder to be had there. And Wolverine had that for a season. We see at the end of X-Men, at the end of X3, and it's like he's sort of come into that place of family. And then we get a movie where it's fallen apart, and he gives that girl a next stage of a future, but there are still guns in the valley. It's much less cut and dried than Shane, and I kind of wonder if that's intentional, and I kind of wonder like what is Mangold and the storyteller, what is trying to be communicated, and I don't think it doesn't feel like redemption. It feels like we're not certain if that's possible in this life or even a thing, but maybe we kind of wish it is, and it leaves I kind of categorize movies, either a movie has a very strong life transcendent story to it, or it kind of has more of that life under the sun, maybe everything's meaningless. I walked out feeling more life under the sun, which to me is fruit for conversation with your group that's gone to the movie. I don't think it's a bad thing. I just thought it left it far more open-ended, and the any really satisfying answer or feeling of redemption left unclosed.
Yeah. I felt the same way. I felt like, you know, and I kept asking myself, should we have seen this Eden place? Should we have seen Across the Border or not? Should it be left with the cross turning into an X? And originally walking out of the theater that the filmmakers were a little too pessimistic in their belief in, you know, a possibility, hope that something could come out of this, or really, I guess, to take it to a meta level, you know, an afterlife of some kind, because, you know, you're talking about with Charles with paradise, it's a false paradise that he's reached. There's an uncertainty of what you're crossing over into, and all that language, you know, it's obviously going to lend itself to an eternal kind of question. But the more that I've thought about it, the open-endedness, even though I feel like it's a little too open, a little too vague, I feel like it lends itself to the uncertainty that the movie is trying to convey about what becomes of the end. You know, what becomes of us in the end, but what is the end? What does it look like? I don't know that Mangold, the filmmakers, the writers got to a point that where they could, I mean, how do you even make that point? You know, we as Christians, you know, have a belief in eternity, in the afterlife. There's, I mean, hey, it's all on faith, you know, and it's a faith that we work out and we struggle with. But if you're writing a movie about this and you don't even have that to land on, I mean, how can you even make a point and say, yes, Eden exists. Everything's happy in the end after having gone through this bloody, emotionally brutal struggle. So I kind of get it at the end. I thought the X cross thing was cool, but a little open ended. But you know, it does leave those questions for you to ask and ponder about.
Well, so I think you raise a great point, or maybe a counterpoint there, Mark. But the idea that because we're Christians, like I'm obviously going to have issue with almost every film, because at the end of almost every film, There is a heroic conclusion or an idea that is presented, and that idea is usually like, this is the way forward, this is how these characters are going to be happy, this is how these characters like could have survived, you know. And there's always things that don't play by the narrative rules, but in general, the protagonist at the end of the film is going to have found something to hold on to, that helps them achieve the end of their journey. And that is almost never going to be like Jesus, you know? Right. Right. So, it's interesting to see where these things, end up lying. And like, to a certain degree, like I can definitely see what you're saying, James, because I don't think at the end of this film, they arrive in a place that is incredibly hopeful, at least from my spiritual perspective. But I think the hope, is on a, there's a micro level hope. And I think it's there because I'm working through it in my mind and I see it. Now, I think it's a terrible place to end. Not necessarily for the movie. I think the movie did fine. It was fine for me where it ended. But I think if you're actually looking for true hope and contentment in your actual life, if you stop at where hope in this film is, then you're going to be disappointed. And that's, I can start explaining that by again, pointing to the birth, death movies review that I'll link in the show notes, where the writer talks about X-23, the reason the X is on the grave, or the reason it makes sense, is not because he used to be an X-Men and it's like an ode to the past. It's because he became an X-Men again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the reason that line or that observation is important is because, James, when you talk about this film perhaps kind of crapping on the idea that it's possible to have Xavier's future, I would say that what they're actually doing, the hope, is despite all the crap that happens to Logan, despite the loneliness and the loss, the hope is the realization that even with X-23, no one's perfect. You know, it goes back to the Flannery O'Connor quote. You know, you have to, like, if X-23 was the person, not the perfect person, but like the sinless child, then her redemption as well, her realization at the end of the film, wouldn't be as powerful to an audience that didn't see her being imperfect as well, or didn't see her committing the sins of the father. So the hope in the film comes from realizing that anybody on a personal level can turn from what they've made you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in our words, like what the world tells you you have to be. And on the micro level, that's where Xavier's future exists. It kind of sounds corny, but it reminds me a lot of that old mantra that's like, be the change you want to see in the world. Like, I think that's the hope in this film. Like, I don't think that's again a great place to end.
Sure.
If you're a Christian, I don't think be the change is a slogan for the Bible.
yeah.
You know, now I don't think it is that, but I think that also is where it's a great start, because I also think be the change could be a lesson in the Bible. Now given like be the change with the help of the Spirit, or, you know, something like that, you know, an incomplete mantra. But it's like I see a lot of films do, and that is, they say, hey, look, you can't change the big thing. All you can do is be the best person you can be. Mm-hmm. And don't let the world get you down about it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm looking at reviewers who are seeing crazy amounts of hope and redemption in this film, that's what I think they're seeing. Because that's what I see. I mean, I don't think it's a bad message.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think it's a complete message.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, James?
No, it does. I usually prefer films that present questions.
Mm-hmm.
And because I feel like if a movie answers the question too succinctly, it's usually wrong. Yeah. And
because everything's easy to answer, right? We have all the answers.
Right, but if it asks the question, you know, do things fix us in our identity, and there's no way to break out of that, right? Almost more than be the change. It's like I walked out of the film. It's like, can we change? It leaves that hanging, because in one sense, I mean, Logan saves her, but it's really by still exercising his proficiency at killing.
Yeah,
and so it's like, well, okay, so he sort of channeled the thing he could do, which is he's stuck in and doesn't want to be in, but it serves its purpose, and he dies. And like, well, and I'm not sure that gives me all my hope. I'm still left with that lingering question. Then, well, can she then change? Is there hope for her that she can actually change unlike him, or change in a way more dramatic than him? Or, mm-hmm. and there's that, it's just hanging there, which makes for a fantastic conversation about, you know, are things about our identities fixed, which is a big conversation point in our culture today, right? Mm-hmm. Are aspects of our identity fixed and unchangeable, or, and should we not want certain ones of them to be, or should they, is life about accepting them, or is life about seeking to change them? And that's a huge question that I think the film pokes a little thing out there. And then there's that hangs in the air. You know, can we change? And if so, then what is the vehicle, or what actually provides the impetus for that change? And so I think the film gives lots of seeds for that without succinctly answering anything, which is great. Because if it had tried, it would have fallen far short of what I believe. So that's yeah. great.
Well, and I think the seeds are that it does provide are fascinating and do provide a little bit of that hope, because, you know, I see Charles Xavier in this movie. He's not just there to be an interesting character, because he's been in the movie's past. I mean, he means a lot to Logan, and he means a lot to the story, because I see him a little bit more like the Oracle in The Matrix, you know, or that kind of Oracle figure that tells you a truth that might not be the way that it sounds. And one of those things that stuck with me was when Lara's explaining to Logan, he told me that you're dying, and you know, he said, what'd he say? And he said, don't let you, right? Well, you know, that obviously means, okay, don't let him kill himself, you know, in the physical. But once he's dead, that means don't let him die. Don't let this, what he does and what he has capable within him, that I feel like, you know, Xavier's kind of understanding that he'll show eventually, because he knows Logan so well, that he's going to show her and instill in her this sacrifice and this good that is ultimately in Logan. Don't let that die. So I think that the hope is there if you examine what the film was trying to say in little pieces like that, where, you know, Charles Xavier, I mean, I feel like, you know Logan's going to die in this movie, so saying a line like that doesn't hit until after he dies. You're like, you know, I understand that she's going to carry on that bit of good that's worth carrying forward. So very open-ended and provides those questions. But, I think the X-Men films generally leave you with they generally leave you with a Charles Xavier's side of things is a little bit more likely to happen, right? I mean, he does come across a bit too unrealistically altruistic in his vision, but ultimately, you know, that's what I'm saying with what we hope for in our characters and what we hope for in ourselves is hope and goodness can survive, and that how perfect of an echo is it to have this, you know, this caregiver to a father figure transitioning out of life, then this person becomes a father figure for a younger person. This idea that we transfer our beliefs and our good things, hopefully, to the ones that are our family or ones that we love. And so that's part of the message of the film is hopeful, even though it's a very grim, you know, dark, gritty hope. It's there. And so I really enjoyed that there was some nuance there, and they're not trying to force feed you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, so with that, I do think they dance around a lot of what they kind of assume the answers are. Because, you know, James, you said, like, well, if someone's going to change, what provides that change? The movie doesn't say what provides that change. I don't think it says definitively, but I do think it gives us some hints at what they think probably can change you. And you're even talking about it too, Mark, because you're saying, like, you know, don't let Logan die, or don't let him die, you know, like, as being more than just a physical death. Like, let the idea of him, let his example live on. Let that change you. And while they're not saying that this one thing will do all the changing or convince you, it does, like I said, it leads, I think, with sacrifice. I think it's pretty clear, like, when you're willing to lay down your life for someone, like, that is life-changing. to you, obviously, because you're dead. But also to people.
It really puts a damper on your life that you're dead.
Yeah, but it definitely changes
your life. It does change your life.
But also the fact that when someone dies for you, it changes you. Mm-hmm. It gives you a different perspective. Like, this is the entire terrible message at the end of Saving Private Ryan, you know, when he's like, Ernest, because he's seeing all these people die for him. Because that's a terrible way to put it. That's basically saying, like, you know, we have died for you, now earn this death, as opposed to Logan, or like versions of this that we see that I think connect with us because we're created in the image of God. And so this entire story of redemption is written on us. And when Logan basically isn't telling her to do anything, he's just like, I care for you and I'm willing to die. I don't even know where you're going. I don't even know if the Canadians like are there, mm-hmm. like doing good things. But I'm going to die because I will give you the chance at life. And I think we all connect with that. And I think we connect with it because it points back to like what changed, at least in the three of us, what has changed our lives, knowing that there is someone who died for us. It's life changing. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah. it completely changes your perspective. It gives your life value. Like, suddenly X-23 is like, well, my life must have value because someone was willing to give their life to continue it. You know, there's just like, there's so many things that it does. And again, I don't think the film is trying to specifically say that this is the only way, or, you know, this is a peak way, but I feel like if they're going to try to make something that hits, and they're going to try to convince a character to change, they pick something that is awful relatable, mm-hmm. or awful agreeable. Mm-hmm. When we think, oh yeah, this might have actually changed. Actually, this may have convinced Laura that she doesn't have to be who they created her to be.
Well, it's interesting that she's on the you know, she's in the middle of two sides of what she could become. Mm-hmm. You know, she's literally X-23, and the worst that she could become is the next number up, X-24, and we see what that is. It's this just kind of berserker rage monster that, you know, is set out for killing, and that is something that is the epitome of what they made them, right? So the you know, the new Logan, the new Wolverine, this X-24 killing machine, is after her, and she's seeing she gets to see in the end, especially, two sides of Wolverine. Much like two sides of Hugh Jackman, if you've ever seen that Saturday Night Live sketch, where he's both the most masculine and the most feminine man in the world. if you've never seen that SNL sketch, one of the best ever.
Well, and the X-24 is great because there's actually not two natures fighting
right
inside of X-24. It's just all the one.
Evil. Yes, so it's the pure evil side. Well,
it's
not even evil.
It's purpose, sure, without humanity.
Right, right. Thanks for the nuance, Fizz.
There you go.
but, you know, it's pure darkness, pure, you know, sacrifice, basically, in that what she sees in the end of. And she's literally, you know, right between these two. And so that's just another parallel, another force to drive home of, like, don't be what they made you. Does that mean be Wolverine? Not necessarily. That means definitely don't be X-24. It means maybe find your own way. So, you know, again, more questions.
Well, and I think, and that's, you know, I think if growing up 50 or 75 years ago in a predominantly quote unquote Christian culture, I don't know if people would have been as happy with the question that the film asks there, which is question your enculturation. I think it's a fantastic question now. Yeah. You know, I just, like, you know, in where we are living now, I mean, it's just in America, like, question your enculturation is a fantastic idea, which I love that the film puts that out there. If people think that through, right? So don't be who they made you. Oh, okay, who has culture made me to be, and what should I be questioning? What should I find suspect? And she has this childlike faith, which he's lost. You know, we've even got that, you know, instead of a Bible, we have X-Men comics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in that X-Men comic, there is a code to Eden. And he, you know, it's like, well, he's not convinced even half of what's in those comics was ever true.
Yeah.
And he certainly doesn't think Eden is true, but something about, right. I mean, somebody does answer on the other side of that line. So there's almost this like, she has this childlike faith that there is an Eden. So I think like his sacrifice is pivotal, but also the reality that things only work if his sacrifice is there and there's a reality of Eden. And so there's another curious, you know, fanboy question then. It's like, oh, so well, what's Eden? And what if we're going to apply this to our struggle in life, what is essential for us to have any true hope then? Like there does have to be something across that border. There has to be something on the other side of that line, or again, our struggles are for a myth that is ultimately meaningless. So there's plenty of great fruit there, which is why, as I keep stressing, although I say it falls far short of the Christian message, mm-hmm. but I think it does it in a beautiful open-ended way, which provokes tons of great conversations.
Yeah, because I mean that in and of itself, without that hope at the end, if you're not living in a reality, or if you're not believing a reality that is greater than the one that you can, you know, see, smell, and touch,
mm-hmm.
then I would say sacrificing yourself for another person is actually one of the stupidest things that you can do.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
because this is all you have. Like,
well, you know, the film. It kind of opens up questions about faith. You know, you definitely see the parallel between the comics and these made up stories being parallel to what some people, you know, view scripture as, view the Bible as, and it's like, well, she just learned it in a comic book. None of that, half that stuff isn't real. Eden's not real. And you know, you have a really interesting kind of context for Logan, because I had a minister friend of mine one time, you know, explaining how he was asked by someone, well, if you could go back in time and walk up to the tomb where Jesus was, and after 3 days you open the tomb and he's still there and he's still dead, how would that affect your faith? And he said, I would immediately renounce everything I've ever believed, because there is a power to knowing that what you believe in actually exists, even if you don't know if it, you know, you can't see it with your own eyes. Faith has an extraordinary power to it. And so that the question, you know, it's almost like Logan believes he has seen evidence of the contrary. And so he's almost stopped believing it, and he has to kind of be, you know, drawn there by his, you know, his faith has to be reignited. It's not perfect parallel, obviously, but
Logan's like the Lee Strobel of the X-Men universe.
Sure. but you know, I just not that's necessarily what the movie was saying at all, but or going for, but I remembered that conversation and how, you know, that faith is extraordinarily important to myself, and I think it's extraordinarily important, like what you're saying, Fizz. If you don't believe there's something else, I mean, giving your life for somebody is real stupid,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially if you firmly believe there is nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's how faith affects us, is saying, I know what's next, or I don't know what's next, really guides your path through life.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me to see because to me it's a paradox. The idea that, like, shared morality kind of says that sacrifice is a high virtue,
mm-hmm.
Yet it also says that there's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem very virtuous to be dead, or it doesn't seem very, I don't know. Like I said, that this is one of those apologetics conversations that would be very tangential to the show, but it is incredibly confusing to me. Mm-hmm. Like I said, and, you know, people would claim that Christians, oh, you're just, you know, you're not using logic. Just, if you use logic, you'll come to the same conclusion. I was like, I use logic and I can't see where you're at. Like, why do you do the things you do? Oh, we just all know it's right. We all know it's right. Like, that doesn't, I mean, like, mm-hmm. anyway, so
if there's common sense, we wouldn't have serial killers.
Yeah, that's right. or even just bad cereal. You know, like, you know, does anyone actually eat, like, just like terrible not frosted flakes, but and they're frosted flakes that's not frosted. Like it's
corn,
just like
cornflakes.
Cornflakes. People eat cornflakes?
Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah,
put a little sugar. See, there's no common sense in the universe.
Yeah. What is going on? Unfrosted flakes.
What are we talking about?
Why would you not want if I pour some milk on this cardboard, it's gonna make it great. Oh, this is a great way to start my day being depressed.
I like cornflakes, all right.
No, you don't.
I kinda do, yeah.
But yeah,
people who eat cornflakes are just like Logan in his whiskey. They're just subsisting. They're just they have no purpose in life.
Yeah,
they have no frosting.
I mean, I say it hesitantly because I don't think I've eaten cornflakes in 10+ years. It's been a long, long time.
Because it's been that long since your mom tried to punish you.
No, my mom never bought them. My grandma had them at her house.
Oh,
anyway.
Uh huh.
Speaking of tangential things,
I'm saying so. Okay, so let's round things out with a less deep question. I'm curious what you guys think, or well, not even what you think necessarily, but just how you feel. James, how do you feel about Hugh Jackman, quote unquote, retiring the Wolverine?
I personally think it's amazing that it's just kind of mind-blowing to think that I've walked alongside this thing for 17 years. I mean, like that, it's like, oh yeah. Like I think it's probably very, very wise. He actually, unlike many people who just, you know, you look back at the early days of franchises or Lone Rangers or Tarzan actors, and like how many people got to actually take it and put it to bed in the most beautiful way possible, mm-hmm. that I think this film has done, to have that sense of carrying a character like that with, let's face it, unlike a lot of the whiners about playing, you know, Tobey Maguire, other people playing superhero actors, either, you know, seeing it as, you know, just he has given it love, appreciation,
mm-hmm. yeah.
dedication, a cheerful attitude. And I say, well, it's great. I mean, there's that sense where I guess part of us kind of want, I mean, we're like Wolverine. I would love him to live forever and keep doing movies. I wish Harrison Ford was still 30 and could give us 80,000 episodes that were, you know, quality Indiana Jones movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can't happen. So I think the retiring the character is fantastic, and it doesn't look the way their universe is structured. It seems like they'll either go with X-23 or find other ways around a recast anytime soon. So I'm also not too worried about a reboot that happens too quickly. I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like it looks like we could retire this and actually have some breathing room,
mm-hmm.
the way that they've set it up. Because I think, I mean, even in the comics, Laura is Wolverine now. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've already got all the tools to not just, you know, replace him instantly. So it would be great to just see it put to bed for a while and have us all breathe and enjoy the fact that we've had the character for almost 2 decades and an actor that through thick and thin, good movie, bad, was just faithful to it. That was sweet.
Yeah. I mean, if there's anything you can say is positive about X-Men Origins, it's Hugh Jackman was still totally the Wolverine the whole time.
That's right.
Like he embodied.
That's right.
That was a movie that had Wolverine in it. That was something. Yeah. And Hugh Jackman was still great at Wolverine.
Yeah.
There's some great Wolverine moments in that movie, actually. So how do I feel about it? I feel that he's done a wonderful job,
mm-hmm.
Of being faithful to the character and faithful to the fan base. I mean, you know, this character gave him a career. I mean, mm-hmm. it launched his career. I mean, he was plucked kind of just out of nowhere, hey, you're going to play this character for this movie because the original guy dropped out, Garay Scott, maybe it was the original.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think he had like...
Mistake.
Who was it?
No, I'm just saying that was obviously a mistake to drop out.
Yeah, no kidding.
You could have been the Wolverine.
Yeah, but thankfully, you know, we got Hugh Jackman.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had like 2 weeks to prepare for the role originally. So, and has kept that kind of like, you know, character that he developed in the first film. I mean, it's largely been very consistent. So I think he's done a wonderful job. I mean, you know, like James is saying, not many actors. It's kind of like going out, having a professional sports career and going out on top, winning a championship, and then leaving. I mean, that's essentially what the actor, this is the actor's version of that.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, how many actors have played James Bond? How many actors have, you know, there's all different kinds of roles that have multiple actors in it. So I feel like I'm satisfied with where he's taking care for the character. However, I also feel like he better show up and fight Deadpool, or I'm going to like have this hole in my soul because of all the setup that they've done with Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool. Man, I love how he has kept
the Wolverine story. And he wants
him so bad. Oh, man. I love how they've kept the Wolverine story wonderful, perfect. I can accept that. But it would also just be the icing on the cake if he shows up in Deadpool 2 and just beats the crap out of Deadpool, and that's it.
Yeah, just tangentially.
Like, yeah, just all of a sudden, it's just a random scene, and he comes in and just, they fight, they have some great, okay, witty conversation, and he just beats the crap out of him.
I take it back. I was against that, but when you put it that way, since I'm not really a fan, to have him come into the movie and beat the crap out of Deadpool, I now would like him to make it 10 movies. That would actually be a nice finished movie.
Boy, that's
it. Would be as good as him showing up all of a sudden in X-Men First Class.
Yeah.
With the wonderful brief "Go F yourself." I mean, it was just, it's so funny. Yeah. And I feel like Deadpool has the ability to do that. With just that kind of briefness to it, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the potential there with the fourth wall just great, like showing up out of nowhere, just having like one scene where he like runs across some X-Men like fighting, and it still plays to Hugh Jackman because Hugh Jackman is older now, but he can still do like the roughly past present day age, you know.
Oh yeah.
So it's not like he needs to go back and be like, you know, futures past or whatever, young or something. No, I mean, we're like, wait, when did that happen? Right. How are you more muscly now?
Exactly.
For the Hugh Jackman fitness plan.
Yeah, more like Huge Jackman.
That's right. I've always called him Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. Well, so I think the interesting thing about maybe Hugh Jackman going out on his terms or almost doing like the actor kind of character mic drop, like, boom, I got to, I feel like we're starting to see a trend of, which I think is going to be a good thing, especially if it's done right. Because, you know, James, you just mentioned Harrison Ford, like getting to do this with Han Solo. We sadly saw the end of Han Solo, which is a bummer. Well, we didn't see the end of Han Solo. We'll get to see the Han Solo story or whatever. But
that's right.
But Harrison Ford kind of saying like, this is me being done with this character. Like, this is how it ends. Mm-hmm. Like, you saw me, you were introduced, you fell in love, and you were with me on this journey until it's over. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing we'll actually probably get to see that with Indiana Jones at some point as well. Mm-hmm. And we kind of technically already have, if you watch like the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, we get to see like old Indiana Jones, telling stories and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But those are just really incredible shows that I got to watch when I was a kid and I loved.
But we've only had three Indiana Jones movies, so
yeah. No, well, we're getting ready to have a fourth one. So I don't know whether they're calling it Indiana Jones 5. It's actually kind of confusing.
That's
kind of
weird. Maybe, but it's like a misnomer. Maybe that's like the MacGuffin.
Something to do with that. It's like with the 13th floor. Like, they just skipped that one floor.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, it's kind of there, but it's not really.
Something, yes.
Getting another Indiana Jones is like a high five.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
That's supposed to be
That's what it is.
Yeah. with that, like, I think we're going to see a lot of this happening in the future. You know, I asked at the beginning of the show, like, do you think rated R will become a trend? I kind of agree with where you went with that, James, where I don't think it's necessarily a trend. I think people are feeling more free to tell the story that they want to tell.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Hopefully. I feel like there will be some missteps. Some people are going to make rated R movies because they think, oh, Deadpool is awesome. And that's how it's going to get greenlit, and it's going to be terrible, and no one's going to watch it. And then they're going to lose money, and that's what they deserve. But
there's always a Green Lantern.
Yeah, there's always a Green Lantern. So, but I do think a trend will be people trying to pass the torch well. And I think we're going to see this in the next, 3 years.
Much like Logan passed the torch well to Laura. See what I did there?
No.
You're talking about people passing the torch well.
Oh, well, I already mentioned Logan. Yeah. I thought you were making some kind of torch pun or something.
No, I was not.
No, you were just not being funny. That sounds like you, Mark. No, I was just
thinking. I'm guessing some of the cinematic universe is going to get a handoff with the Infinity stuff. And I'm sure some of them will miss, too. Like, probably some of them will be like, no, really? That's going to be Robert Downey's last? No.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get Chris Evans, capping off Cap. I don't mean to do that.
There you go. Much better.
I'm going to pretend I meant to do that.
Or if we'll see Tony get a Stark send-off.
Yeah.
Oh, man. will Thor get a thunderous ovation?
Well, it probably won't be as strange as Benedict Cumberbatch leaving.
Oh, man. What have we started?
Oh, my gosh.
How much further can we go? Let's see.
Oh, my God. But James, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So I think it's going to be just as kind of reflective about, one, how old we all are now, when we get to look back and say, wow, Chris Evans is no longer playing Captain America.
Yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah.
Like, this is really weird. Because we've been with him, because Infinity War is like 2019, 2020, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so after that, who knows what the MCU is going to look like. And hopefully there will be some really good closings of those chapters.
Yeah.
And we will get to be with these characters. And I'm sure that we're missing a lot, because I just kind of was thinking of this on the fly. And so I would love, if anyone out there has thought of or remembers a really good character send-off. And I would say specifically not a TV show.
And if you could put it into a pun form.
Right.
And if you can put it in a pun form, bonus point.
I thought of another one. Will Hulk have a smashing ending? Does that work?
Maybe.
Continue with your question. I'm sorry.
So I would say I'd be interested if any of the listeners out there, come to the Facebook discussion group. And once this episode is posted, tell us who you think played a character well for an amount of time. It doesn't have to be, I don't want to say a long or short, but like more than just like one movie. And then they rode that character into the sunset and they did it well. And try not to make it a TV show, because I think TV show's entire purpose is to ride their characters off into the sunset. Well, so I think that we can come up with a lot of examples. Just as a curiosity, because like I said, we're kind of thinking this on the fly.
Christian Bale.
Hey, man.
Sorry.
Hey.
Sorry.
Hey.
It's giving him out for free.
Wow. Wow.
Well, you know.
Discussion group, man.
Yeah, my...
Come on, Mark. look what you've done. So with that, like I said, I'm interested in that, like, passing of the torch as well. But with that, we are probably basically at time now. I kind of forgot when we specifically started, but I'm sure we've been talking long enough and people want to go do whatever they need to do, like get out of their cars, because like when you're right at the end of a podcast and you're like,
guys, come on,
I don't want to start with like 3 minutes to
skip 10 seconds, skip 10 seconds,
skip 10
seconds, still talking.
Fizz is still talking. Fizz is still ending the show.
Fizz is still going.
Fizz is still ending the show.
Yep.
I'm gonna like just every 10 seconds, I'm going to say that phrase.
Bad Mark pun. Fizz is still talking.
We've all got other things to do. It's actually late here, fairly early where James is. He's still going to go see Kong. I'm very jealous.
Oh, yeah.
If you've enjoyed this, I want to let you know where you can get a hold of these guys at and see the things that they do. So, James, what is it that you think? Who's your daddy and what does he do? that's not the question. What is it that you do around the web, and how can people follow you?
I left that web. It's just a mess. No, I'm I occasionally check I would say check out facebook.com/cinemagog if you can figure out how to spell that, and posting links to posting links to things that we're doing here and there. There are plans to get the website back up and running in the next couple months. So cinemagogue.com has laid fallow long enough, and I have enough people sticking me in the ribs locally and abroad that I have to start doing something. So
don't tease me.
Don't tease me again. I've said it before.
Cool. And so I'll make sure all those links are in the show notes. So Mark, same thing. How can people find you?
I'm a primary contributor to realworldtheology.com. You may or may not have heard of it.
Sexy. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's true. I do do some features. I got some features coming up on there. I'm excited to start up again. Do join the Facebook group, Facebook discussion group for Real World Theology. I often start things.
Start things.
On that. And we have some good discussions there, and it's a lot of fun. And so, what?
I occasionally end.
Yeah, that's right.
James does end them well.
I enjoy
reading. I lurk.
He rides those ideas off into the sunset as beautifully as it could be done.
Yeah. And he does it well. I really enjoy reading James' stuff. And hey, you can talk to James there too. We can all talk.
That's right.
It's like you're part of the podcast.
Yeah, like if you just want to ignore the parts of social media that you don't want to deal with right now, or most of the internet, mm-hmm. just like put a link directly to the Facebook discussion group, which you can find in the show notes to this. Come there, join us. If you're not part of it, you can just send us a request. We'll approve it and come in, and you can talk to almost anybody who's ever been on the show. Again, including Mark, including James, myself, but yes. That's kind of, you know, self-explanatory.
It's like Eden.
That's right.
Oh, and, man.
Except we know this exists.
Yeah, it does exist.
This is fake.
Yeah, this is Canada, basically. That nice.
That's right. We are that nice.
We need to get Justin Trudeau in there.
the Canada Facebook groups. That's nice.
Yes. That's right. I like it.
Hey. Probably slightly more offensive, but that's fine. well, you can also follow me at Fizzification on Twitter. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by going to realworldtheology.com/support. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. And with that, we wrap up another show. So for Real World Theology, I'm Fizz, reminding you that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Snick it.
Snick, 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 snick. That was a Hulk smashing ending.
Very strange.
I want that pun to work so bad. So bad.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!
They're like, hey, he's hip and down with the youth these days, so...